Hello, and welcome to The Course. I'm Stephen, your host for today, and I'll be speaking with Professor Julian Goh from the Department of Sociology. Professor Goh is a faculty affiliate in the Center for the Study of Race, Politics, and Culture, and a member of the Committee on International Relations. He is the winner of the Lewis A. Kozer Award for Theoretical Agenda Setting in Sociology, given by the American Sociological Association. And his newest book, Policing Empires, Militarization and Race in Britain and America, 1829 through present, explores imperialism's impact upon police militarization in the U.S. and Britain. He's here today to talk to us about his career path and how he became a University of Chicago professor. Professor Goh, welcome to The Course. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, you know, we want to get into your career and your background, but first, I'm just curious if you could sort of quickly tell us how you would explain your research interest to a layperson, someone with no expertise in your fields. How would you explain to them what it is that you do?
Well, I am in sociology. And sociology, you can think of simply as the study of society and social relations and social institutions. There's a wide variety of types of sociology that people can do. My own kind of sociology is particular and certain specific issues. One of the more recent issues has been policing and how historically our policing institutions have been formed. And it's related to my other research, which is on imperialism and empire. And so my most recent work is about how America's overseas interventions have shaped policing at home. And yeah, like I said, there's a lot of different types of sociology, but you know, my particular focus has been most recently on policing and the influence of imperialism overseas on policing.
Okay, very cool. Thank you. And yeah, we'll delve into that a little bit more later. But for now, we kind of like to just get a big picture overview of the trajectory of your career. So could you just lay out for us, you know, your path from college, beginning in college, to where you are now, the different steps you took and the institutions that you've been a part of?
Yeah, well, I think I would trace my current career back to my undergraduate days at the University of Michigan. I double majored in political science and sociology for no reason except that those are courses that I really liked. I had, you know, just randomly taken some of those courses, and I was encouraged by my parents and advisors to, you know, explore different types of courses and try things out that you might not otherwise think to try. And that's what college in many ways is about, is just, you know, expanding your mind and trying different things. So I had tried social sciences, sociology, and political science, and I just really loved the courses. So I started double majoring in them. And then by the time I was a senior, I had become involved in doing some undergraduate research in sociology. And I really just was drawn to the research. I was researching with a professor who specialized in what's called historical sociology, which is essentially a mix of history and sociology. And so I was just doing some fascinating research on the American labor movement for this professor. His name's Howard Kimmeldorf. And I loved diving into the past, and I loved thinking about and looking at society in the past and how it shaped our present. So I just was something about it that really got me excited. And then I started thinking about how can I take what I love, which is doing this research and learning about society, essentially, and how can I maybe make that into a career, if at all? So I eventually landed on coming to graduate school to become a professor. I sort of saw my professors at the University of Michigan and saw that they were teaching and they were also continually learning and doing research themselves and publishing articles and books. And it just seemed like a really interesting and potentially rich kind of life. So I thought I'd try it out, and I applied to graduate school, and I ended up here at the University of Chicago for graduate school. And I really just came into it because I loved it, and it sounded and looked fascinating.
Okay, well, so you know, one thing that we've been asking people is, you know, what they thought they would be when they were young. I mean, like when you were a kid or maybe in like middle and high school. Any sense that you were going to end up in this career, or where did you think you might end up?
Yeah, I mean, I'd always been interested in a couple of things in college. One was politics. I was just really interested in politics. I don't know why. So I thought maybe I would go into maybe political consulting or some kind of career. Not really a politician. I don't think I was really cut out for that, but just something that where I would that would involve some connection to politics. I was toying around with that, and that's partly why I think I liked my political science classes so much. The other possibility was music. I was a musician. I played guitar and did a lot of music, and I thought that might be a possible career too. So I was really exploring a lot of different avenues. I think my interest in politics did shape my interest in coming to graduate school because, you know, I could still pursue an interest in looking at political issues through graduate school. And I think my interest in music was really ultimately an interest in communicating with people, right? Music is just a form of expression, but so is writing and teaching. And these were things that I could also do if I became an academic. So although being an academic wasn't the sole thing I had thought I might do, I really was able to find something that did channel some of my other interests. And so I think it's been really great for channeling some of these other interests that I was hoping to find some kind of career in, and academia seemed like a good place.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You described how you sort of started forming this idea and then this plan to go to grad school. Was there a particular moment, or was there one particular thing that sort of convinced you that going into academia was the right path?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about grad school is that you can apply and just say, I'll try it out and see how I like it, right? And I know a lot of people who just, you know, I don't know what else I'm going to do. I'll go to grad school. That was kind of a thing at my time. Maybe it's not so much now, but in my time, and this is the early 90s, I had a lot of friends who were also like, maybe I'll pursue becoming a professor, or at the very least, I'll get a master's and get out, or maybe get a PhD and maybe go into some other field. So I was never really even 100% certain that it was going to be right for me until I knew that from college, doing the research and just being in that intellectual environment, I knew that I really wanted to try and I was really interested in it. I, of course, was never sure that it would be exactly right for me. But I think when I came to the University of Chicago and started taking graduate classes and meeting other like-minded folks and interacting with professors, it kind of all clicked. And I just realized that this is really, I kind of felt at home, right? I was able to pursue what I wanted to intellectually, surrounded by other people, because, you know, our career choices are so social in many ways. Like you want not only role models of people who have forged paths that makes sense to you, but you also want like-minded people. You know, you want other people who are also interested in the same kinds of things, the same kinds of career, and wanting the same things out of their career. And that was something also that I was able to get at graduate school. So I think the first couple years of graduate school really solidified it for me.
Okay, gotcha. And you said it's sort of like a social decision, and you've already referenced a couple of professors, and I think your parents and people who influenced you. Who in particular, you know, would you say was really supportive and helpful to you on this journey? And I mean, that could be people from academia or outside, but who are some people who, you know, looking back, really supported you?
Yeah, it really was my professors in college. And this is one thing that I think is really important that I tell my students now is to really make sure that you reach out and talk to your professors as much as you can, go to office hours and just talk to them and learn some stuff from them. One of the things that I learned, besides, of course, all the wonderful scholarly issues that we were learning in class, is I got a lot of encouragement from them personally. And I got an insight into what it would be like to be a professor, but I also got a lot of support. And so my professors in college are doing research for Howard Kimmeldorf was very influential. Another professor, Mark Schneider, who was in charge of the undergraduate program and thesis writing, was just very encouraging. And then when I came to University of Chicago, Professor Andrew Abbott, who's still here, is now my colleague. He was incredibly not only supportive, but also these are people who set examples for the kind of thinker I wanted to be. These are, I think, there's a lot of different kinds of professors. There's a lot of different kinds of scholars. And these were scholars who were really pushing the boundaries of the field. And I remember going to my first annual meeting of the American Sociological Association. This is a big academic conference. All the sociologists around the country get together and they all present their work. And it's a really exciting thing if you're like a nerdy young sociologist like me. And I still remember going to this thing and seeing Professor Abbott give a talk. And he was just really pushing the boundaries of the field and inviting his peers to think differently about the world, in this case to really bring in certain historical ways of understanding society. And it was just inspiring, and just to see people, you know, pushing at the top of the game, pushing boundaries. For something about that was really attractive to me. And so I think that there's a kind of role modeling that went on, or at least the kind of role modeling, and that, you know, I sat there and thought, I really want to do that. I want to push boundaries too.
Yeah, cool. So why, you know, how did you sort of end up with this specific focus on imperialism?
Yeah, well, you know, over time, so one of the areas of sociology that I'm in, it's called historical sociology. And it's essentially folks who think that you really can't understand anything going on today without locating it in historically, and tracing out how historically things have come to be the way they are. And it's a really important way of looking at the world, because one of the things it does is that it shows you that the way things are, they don't have to be that way. You know, these are historically shaped, they're contingent, and the world we have is constructed by us. The society we have is something we've made historically. And so there is this subfield called historical sociology, which essentially takes that principle to research. And one of the things I came across when I was thinking seriously about how American society has been shaped historically, one of the things I came across is a history of settler colonialism, of westward expansion, of decimating Native American populations. And then in the early 20th century, America going overseas and conquering foreign countries. One of them was the Philippines in the early 20th century that the United States conquered. And my parents had come from the Philippines. They're immigrants from the Philippines, and they came to Detroit to work. And I was born in Detroit. And I always knew that the Philippines was part of my history. And it was just fascinating to learn that the United States was part of my history too, because of the relationship the United States and the Philippines had had. And so I just really became alive to this notion, or this reality, really, that the American society has been shaped fundamentally by imperialism. So I think that if you're thinking about the world historically, and you're thinking about how society today has been shaped historically, and then you look at history, you can't escape imperialism. Imperialism is a process that has been going on for centuries, and it's how the modern world came to be. It's one of the key forces that has shaped our modern world today. And I'm not just talking about America going overseas and shaping other countries. You know, you just go back to Europe, European expansion, shaping the world through all kinds of interventions around the world, through slavery. You know, really, imperialism is fundamental to our modern world. And so you can't really escape it if you take history seriously.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, you know, we should just define the term a little bit for our listeners. I think people are generally familiar, but how would you define imperialism, particularly in the cases that you have looked at? And I mean, you were just mentioning the Philippines as an example.
Yeah. You know, imperialism is essentially the exercise of power by powerful states over weaker countries. And it can take different forms. One is just conquering another land and taking that land as a colony, which is kind of what the United States did westward in the American West, and then what it did in places like Puerto Rico and the Philippines. But imperialism can also just take the form of shaping or exercising power over other societies by declaring war on them, intervening in them temporarily, even just sending a military over like we did in Iraq or Afghanistan. And so many countries have been occupied by the United States and military, from Central America, Nicaragua, Haiti, you know, Latin America, to other parts of Asia. You know, think about the Vietnam War. All of these I count as imperialism, because these are acts of a powerful country going and exercising power over weaker countries. And so, you know, imperialism is something in the past, but it still goes on, and it has goes on into the present.
So can you tell us a little bit about your research and where it's taken you? I mean, have you visited the Philippines and other countries?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my work over the years has been about American overseas interventions. And even before I studied policing, I studied American imperialism in the Philippines and Puerto Rico. And I spent a lot of time in those two places, even though I'm from the Philippines. I'm not from Puerto Rico, but I was still able to go to Puerto Rico and do research for my dissertation, which then became my first book. And I lived there for, you know, months and months and months, and digging into the archives and doing really fascinating historical work. And I also did the same in the Philippines. I also traveled to a lot of different cities over the years, because you kind of follow, as a scholar, you're kind of following where the records are, and they're not just, they're not just in one country, they're often in various countries. So travel has really been an important part of my career, and just kind of following the leads. I feel fortunate enough to have this job, because one of the things you can do is you can apply for funding to go on these trips and really follow those leads and dig into their historical records. And my colleagues who don't do historical research will still do research overseas, and maybe they'll do studies of societies around the world in different places, and they get to do that kind of travel too. So I've gone to a lot of different places, and it's always been eye-opening, and it's been crucial for my research.
Okay, yeah, very cool. And you've alluded to the fact that your interest has, not changed, but, sort of like shifted slightly more towards policing. Why that shift, and what is interesting to you? What is cool to you about that research? Yeah.
Well, obviously policing in the past couple of years has been an important political topic, with Black Lives Matter sort of forcing us to think about how our policing system in America has some problems. And it's typically seen, rightfully so, as a heavily violent type of institution. There just seems to be something weird about it, just not quite right as an institution. And so as a sociologist, one of the things I'm interested in is trying to figure out, what has gone wrong with policing. And again, as a historical sociologist, that means that I look historically. And so one of the things I've learned is that part of what has made policing so so dangerous, I think, in some ways for American society, is essentially that policing is militarized. It's policing is taken on military equipment, and it uses military mindsets, military type of training. And what this really means is that policing has been influenced by America's military interventions overseas during these imperial interventions. And, not only do you have veterans coming back and becoming police officers, but you also have the same tools and technologies and techniques that the American military develops overseas to fight terrorists or to conquer foreign lands, and essentially using them, bringing them back for policing to use on citizens at home, right? The same kinds of surveillance techniques and the same kinds of weaponry and the same kinds of what are just referred to as crime fighting techniques. A lot of these are developed to fight terrorists overseas or military enemies overseas. And so that's how imperialism has shaped policing. And it's really fascinating to me, this process of taking what has been devised to be used on foreign enemies and applying it to be used on citizens. It's just this important, often underlooked, overlooked process that needs to be better understood. And so that's what really fascinates me.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And I would like to continue following up on that. There's some other questions
about your
biography that I want to make sure we get to also. So, one question is, are there things that you aspire to beyond where you are now? Perhaps either research interests or, other things adjacent to your field. Do you sort of see yourself continuing to do this, or are there other areas of interest out there?
Well, one of the things that we as scholars can do and we have the choice to do is to get involved in our local communities more, using our expertise to maybe be more public, write books that are more public, write newspaper editorials and basically try to influence broader publics besides those in our classroom or besides those in our, in our field. And one of the challenges of doing that is that it takes a lot of extra energy, because we also have our jobs here with teaching and we're trying to write these scholarly articles. But it is an opportunity to reach out and do just a little bit more to reach bigger audiences. And I think a lot of my colleagues and a lot of scholars really feel that desire to do that. And that's one thing that I've only done a little bit. I've done somewhat, but I really want to be able to do more of. And particularly with the work I've been doing on policing, I think that there's a lot of, I think a lot of my research speaks to broader issues going on right now
in the world, and I don't want to keep it confined to the classroom. I don't want to keep it confined to sociology conferences, and I want to, you know, reach bigger audiences. And as scholars at a place like the University of Chicago, we have a platform for reaching out and doing that. And it entails different skills than what we learn in graduate school. It entails all kinds of extra work, but it's definitely the kind of thing that I've been interested in. And a lot of my colleagues I know are still continuing to do. Some of them are very, very outward focused. And I look forward to trying to do that more as much as I can.
Cool. That's a good answer. Thank you. One other question that we've been asking is just, you know, what are some fun parts of your work and what are some of the less fun parts? I mean, like, well, what are some things that give you the most joy? And what would you like to sort of just ditch about the job if you could?
No, I mean, there's so much joy to be had in this job. I mentioned travel, you know, and not just traveling to do research, which is a joy in itself. Just going into these, going to digging in an archive in London or Puerto Rico is just, it's just a fun journey. But also going and lecturing overseas, I've been doing that a lot. That's great to reach out to foreign audiences and to meet all these fascinating people. That's a huge joy to me. Teaching in the classroom, even though, you know, I'm out doing this research and I'm out giving these talks, teaching in my classroom in Chicago is also just an incredible joy. It's really one of the things that I look forward to weekly is just reaching out to my students. And actually, I learn a lot from students, conversations we have. And it's never boring. It's always something new. There are always new students coming in and different views coming in. And that's really exciting and stimulating. And that will never get old to me. So these are just some of the wonderful things that are built into this job that I love. You know, it's hard for me to really talk too poorly about the job. I think I'm incredibly privileged. And I think a lot of academics that are privileged enough to have tenure jobs like myself, I think we all recognize how privileged we are. And we hope we don't take it for granted. So I don't want to say I don't think there's really too much I can complain about. I think that, you know, the only thing is just with universities in general. I think that there's a lot of growing and changing that we need to do as universities, and some of those can be challenging. But I look forward to them. I don't think of those challenges with the universities, you know, changing and growing. I don't think of that as a joy. But I don't think it's terrible. It's some of the challenges is dealing with a huge institution like a university like the University of Chicago. That can be challenging. But it's not, you know, I really don't have anything terrible to say about being a tenured academic. I think it's really the amount of joy that we're given and that we can have. It's just, I really don't take that for granted.
Well, good. Yeah, we haven't heard too many negative things, obviously, as we've been asking that question.
yeah.
Well, on that note, what is advice that you would give to people who, you know, would like to follow in your footsteps or just people who are entering your field or looking into entering your field?
Yeah, I mean, the fear, being an academic is not, it's I think it's getting more challenging probably than when I was in graduate school in the 90s and when I started looking for a job. I think that because there's been so many changes in universities, there's just a lot of differences, I think, in the field. So I think it's more challenging probably, and I recognize that. I think the advice I would give to students or younger folks thinking about going to grad school, thinking about becoming an academic, is to really, first of all, make sure that you reach out to your professors. As I said, if you're in college and you're thinking about doing this, reach out and get as involved as you can. Find research projects. Try to, you know, do as much as you can within academia to learn more about it. And like I said, I mean, it's really your professors are there to help you, and hopefully some of them, or even just one of them, will help you out in your academic career, and maybe you can do research for them or you can get involved in some way. So reach out, don't be shy, I guess is one thing I'd say, and take advantage of, if you're a student, take advantage of all the resources at the university. And then the other thing is to really make sure that you are just pursuing what you love to do. You know, there's a lot of sort of hoops you have to jump through in academia, but those are just necessary. They're part of the system. But what is really important is to just make sure that you are pursuing intellectually what really interests you, and keep focused on what you really want to study and what really excites you. You know, do research and pursue questions that really excite you personally, and make sure you're not pursuing them just because you're told to, or you think that this is something someone else tells you is good to do. You need to just follow your own passions, and I think everything else will follow from that.
All right. Yeah, that's some great advice. Thank you. And a last question, which I think you've already spoken to, but, you know, maybe if you have more to say about it, or if you could just sort of give an example, what is the most gratifying thing that you do in your field?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be cliche and just say it's teaching. It's you know, there's a lot of other wonderful things I mentioned, but I think really just teaching and reaching out to other people, whether it be teaching in a classroom or whether it be teaching when I'm giving a lecture overseas to other folks, it's really just such a wonderful, it's just a wonderful thing. It's basically this process of reaching out and speaking to other people and telling them what you've learned, and it's a form of communication. It's a form of engagement that is just intrinsically rewarding.
All right. Okay. Well, Professor Goh, thank you so much for joining us today on The Course.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Professor Goh for his time today. The Course Takers, if you enjoyed listening to today's interview, please check out the others. You can find out more about the University of Chicago through uchicago.edu or the university's campus in Hong Kong through uchicago.hk. See you around.